Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life. Rising above, taking just a minute, I imagine stepping into a hot air balloon. The balloon slowly lifting up into the blue sky. Looking down, I see the picture of my life. Any problems seem so small. I take this moment to enjoy silence, peace, and to rest my mind. As the balloon gently descends, I return to my day with a quiet and peaceful mind.
Take a ride with me to paradise. Heaven's in your heart beating inside. You're alive, the great divine, older than time.
Another miracle.
of you.
Welcome everyone to America Meditating Radio. That was Paul Lefteniger from Toronto, Canada, The Miracle of You, a song that was inspired as a result of the suicide of his father, and then Paul started to get into the art of music. It's always incredible for us to recognize how sometimes tragedy becomes a catalyst in moving us forward and giving us insights in areas of our lives that we might have suppressed because we were just doing all the right things, saying the right words, and practicing ourselves to be in the right way. And where deep down inside, we were actually really wishing to be the true sense of self. And I think when we look at leadership of today, we're not looking at people who read a manual or, you know, play out the absolute proper playbook, how to be a leader, how to be a dictator, or how to be a CEO, how to be the best chef. But I think the best leaders is sort of like how the American Indians choose their leaders of their tribe. They pay attention to the youngings from the ages of 1 to 7, and they observe their behavior to see how they interact with others, how they blend in, how they look out, how are they responsible, and then they select the future tribal leader just by looking at their qualities as a child. And I find that to be a very profound way of us moving more into a kind of leadership that can actually be very genuine and more caring about the quality of other people's lives. I always think about it. Some of us are given power and that power corrupts us, but some of us use that power to elevate so many others. And I'm hoping that I'll continue to stay in that category, because one never knows what is that one thought that just shifts you and you change. Something happens, even if it's the betrayal of your humanity. It could happen at that level where all of a sudden you shift. I've been trying to research the individuals in America of recent. The rate of mass shootings has increased 7 times in the United States within the last year. Can you just imagine that? Statistics have shown that there has been at least one mass shooting a day in America. That's huge in terms of the statistics. That means, did something shift in the person? Was there something that happened at such a deep level that it hurt and it felt powerless? And sometimes the only way that we can believe in our power is to have a weapon in our hands and go, well, I'm in charge now. Here's how I roll. But we know that that's not really the way of real leadership. Real leadership is being able to really look at your thoughts and know deep within your being, this isn't right, this doesn't feel right. And that something in you says, I have to change this. I have to change this. But let's talk to an expert on leadership, someone who I was with in the Global Oneness Summit that I participated in last month. Dr. Lance Secretan is a pioneering philosopher and corporate advisor whose best-selling books, inspirational talks, and life-changing retreats have touched the hearts and minds of hundreds of thousands of people around the globe. But he's also the author of 21 books about leadership, inspiration, corporate culture, and entrepreneurship, as well as an award-winning memoir, A Love Story. His latest book is The Bellwether Effect. Stop following, just start inspiring. I love that. Lance is the former CEO for Fortune 100 company, university professor, award-winning columnist. It goes on. He also coaches and advises leaders globally, and he's ranked among both the top 30 most influential executive coaches and the top 30 most influential leadership experts globally. He is a recipient of many awards, including the International Caring Awards. Van Halemendares, I miss him, who heads that, and whose previous winners include Pope Francis, the Dalai Lama, Jimmy Carter, and much more. We're privileged to welcome our wonderful brother, Dr. Lance Secretan. Thank you for joining us today, Lance.
Good to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. So you have written 21 books. Guess you have a lot of time not on your hands. You must be so busy. And, you know, it inspires me, you know, like Dwayne Dyer will say, you know, you have your book in you or your song is in you. You've got lots. But it's interesting where your karmic soul energy is leading towards the area of leadership of, you know, a corporate culture and how we should behave in a corporate sector. Could you share with our listeners, Lance, what was it that was your inspiration in somehow finding yourself more intrigued in this area?
Well, I've been a leader, so I was responsible for building a Fortune 100 company with, of course, the help of a wonderful team. But one of the things I've learned since I've been teaching at the university or consulting with clients is that we're actually chasing something I think we're never going to be able to find, which we call leadership. And I believe that it isn't leadership we actually need. I think what we need is inspiration. I don't think we know really what leadership is. I don't think we're able to describe it. If you can't describe it, it's hard to teach it. So I think we're in a bit of a mess. And I think if you look around, we haven't done a very good job of leading or teaching leadership because it's broken in just about every sector of our society that you can think of. So what are we looking for? I want to be inspired. I want people to inspire me, and therefore I can do great things.
Could you give me some examples of people who have inspired you and what was at their base that you connected with that was somehow able to inspire you?
Well, I think it depends how you frame things. So ironically, some of the people that inspired me were some of the people that were the worst leaders I've ever worked with in my life. But I learned from them what not to do.
Yes, opposite. I get that.
So I could see what wasn't working, and I could say, well, this isn't rocket science. If we just do the opposite, it'll be fantastic. So in many ways, that's what I also did. So I think you can find it everywhere.
You know, I should have known that because I had a person who was in charge of, you know, a particular region and area, and they were so drunk in their position. You could just see the only thing they wanted is for you to feed their title in their position. Even though I know they've earned getting there or whatever reason that they've gotten there. But I remembered I was their target to try to disempower and to somehow make me realize who was in charge. And I knew that so clearly, Lance. My gut knew this person had no good intentions for me. And in observing her, I was very clear I would never treat somebody like that when I'm in a position of leadership. And you are right. It was an inspiration. Thank you for reminding me about that. So in your book, One, which was published in 2006, you talked about, well, how we have traveled from oneness to separateness and how conscious leadership is needed now. Especially now more than ever. I'm in Washington, D.C., by the way, if that's any consolation to give me a lot of empathy. So explain to our listeners about conscious leadership. And, of course, we know why it's important now. But put some light on how would the layperson or individuals who are looking to become more in that dimension understand what it requires?
Well, what has happened in the journey is that, let's say, 6,000 years ago, we were one. And it doesn't really matter what your belief system is. At some point, there was nothing. And from that nothing came everything that we now see and experience in our lives. And along the way, that oneness started to change. So it began to change, for example, with some of the very earliest philosophers, Socrates, Aristotle, and so on. And they taught us logic and reason and rationing. Now, we had never done this before. It seems strange to think about it this way today. But back then, you know, if we wanted to make a decision, we would look at the clouds or a flower or a shaman. We didn't have reason and logic. We didn't make decisions that way. We had high priests and shamans. And so eventually the scientists in the Renaissance era and in the Middle Ages, Descartes and others, gave us a concept that we now call science. But essentially what they were doing was they were taking big subjects and breaking them down into little pieces so that we could understand them. That's known as the scientific method. That's now how we teach just about any subject, whether it's university level or school level, but across academia, but almost everywhere else as well. And not only that, but we have now learned to separate everything else as well. So we separate by demographics, by politics, by age, religion, income, education, gender, ethnic background, race. I mean, there's no end to the ways in which we're doing this, and big data in modern organizations has perfected the art of narrowing this down into the tiniest slivers so that we can market directly to those people. Now, from this comes our pain. So I've argued in the book, one, that when we are broken, hurt, wounded, or sad, it's because we're separated from what or whom we love. And when we're inspired and joyful and happy and in bliss, it's because we are one with what and whom we love. And that can explain all of life's adventures.
Now, would you say that the separation that happens is because of the ego identity slipping in? Because we're in this cosmic law of entropy. So here we are born, and I love the fact that you use 6,000. I use 5,000 years ago. So I'm going to need to catch up to that 1,000 that I've lost when you were on the planet having a great time. But the law of entropy that actually seeps in, aren't we supposed to become separate to actually end up going back to one?
Well, maybe that's the way it'll work in the end. I'm probably not going to live to see that day, but I'm more inclined to think that what's actually happened is that we have tried to make it easy for our simple minds to grasp things. We're not ready to do the work. It's much harder work to see the whole, and it's very easy to see the small piece. I can say it's easy for me to see that I can throw my Coke can out of my car window, and that in that moment, that's an easy, simple thing for me to understand. To see the bigger picture of what I'm actually doing to the planet and the implications of all of that, and if millions and billions of people do the same thing, what will happen down the road hundreds of years away from now, that's a much harder mental effort. And that's where I think we've kind of become lazy. And what we need to do is really become much more aware, which means more conscious, and that means to work the mind a little more.
Beautiful. You know, recently I've observed myself looking very much far ahead into the future, about 50 years in the future. And I found myself asking the question, I wonder how history will write about this age that we're in, this period that we're in, because, you know, I look at what I've inherited historically and what my interpretation has been with history up until now. But then I find myself thinking, Lance, like, oh my God, I don't think anyone can really describe really what they encountered at particular times. And when it goes in a book, isn't it a particular person's interpretation? And I'm looking at what we are enduring in the U.S., in the U.K., in Europe, in Africa, in all these countries. And I think about what would we write about this time that our souls endured what it endured, when we're supposed to be civilized, when we're supposed to be in charge of our lives, when we're supposed to be more conscious. I mean, how would we write that 50 years from now? Have you ever had that thought?
Well, I do, and I also go the other way and go backwards 50 years or even more. I have to think about my father, for example. And he would complain, and he would be 126 if he were alive today. So he goes back to the, not the last century, but the one before. And he would complain about how the world was going to pieces, how everything was broken, how there was no hope for the future, and so on. I mean, he wasn't a depressing man, but he had a very dark view of what was going on and said, you know, we're a human species that's up to no good and it's not going to go well. Well, here we are, you know, let's say 50 to 70 years later, and it didn't work out that way. It actually is much better. Now, we can say, yes, there are lots of things happening that we don't like, but actually it's way better. I can walk out of my door today and not get scalped or shot or beaten up or eaten, and that didn't used to happen a few hundred years ago. So we've made a lot of progress, and that's a simplistic example, but there are lots. And I think if we just take this line and just extend it out into the future, I think we'll be in good shape. I think it's very positive. I think we're doing a lot of things, and I think we have the ultimate hope that human beings, in the end, do want to will the good of the other. There may be selfishness and greed, but it's not all. It's the minor.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, let's talk about your new book. Congratulations. The Bellwether Effect. I love that. So you're going to have to educate the little sister here. What is a bellwether, and why did you choose such a title?
Well, the bellwether is an old English term. It's about a ram that has a bell tied around its neck, and it leads the flock. And when the shepherd loses the flock in the fog, in the Scottish hills or wherever it might be, the bell tells him where they are. And so the lead sheep is the bellwether. Now, in the corporate world, a bellwether company is a company, let's say in the 60s and 70s, it would have been IBM, GE, Honeywell, companies of that kind. And they would start things like Six Sigma or reengineering or total quality, and the world would catch on. And books would be written about it. And pretty soon, the bellwether effect, which is what happens when many companies adopt the behavior of one, it's kind of like a virus. And so we end up with these things happening in organizations. Now, in the modern era, that would be Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Twitter, and so on. And so those companies do the same thing. They're the bellwethers. The bellwether effect are all the companies that do it. Now, let me give you an example. The performance appraisal is probably the most reviled business practice in modern organizations. It was started a long time ago, in this case, by the Army, and the Army wanted to fast-track its officers, particularly, for new assignments every year, 18 months to 2 years, and so, therefore they needed a system to do that. Performance appraisal was what they came up with, but people picked it up and now have copied it in 80% of organizations. You ask anybody in any company, do you love your performance appraisal process? And they will all tell you, no, it's terrible. We can't stand it. It's demoralizing. It's insulting and negative. Well, 80% of companies do it. So why are we doing this? This is the bellwether effect. We want to create inspiring organizations that lift people up, but we're doing goofy things in organizations that pull them down. So the bellwether effect lists 8 of these, including the performance appraisal process, and shows ways in which we could do this much better and therefore clear the runway, as it were, so that we are now in a position to lead in an inspiring way.
That's fantastic. I love that. And I think it's very timely at this time because there's a thing that you talk about, which you just mentioned about counteractive business practices. That's never an easy thing because people are so accustomed to their patterns of doing things, but the times are changing. The even folks in the office, they've moved on to a different understanding of things. But sometimes you create a particular dynamics in the workplace or a particular section in the workplace, which you put people in charge of that area, which was needed. But 5 years later, that area is not even needed anymore. But yet money is wasting in that specific area. No one is actually seeing it. So there's a lot of counterproductive ways that are going on in the business practices. But could you tell us about a few of these practices and what are alternatives that can lead us more to an inspiring culture?
Well, the first one, which I begin the book, is fear. We're afraid of everything. We're afraid of being hacked. We're afraid of being getting into trouble with regulators or with unions. We're afraid of pushback from customers. We're afraid of letting people down. We're afraid of not pleasing the boss. We're afraid of getting tired. There's no end of the ways in which we feel fear. Not only that, but we actually use fear, as you pointed out in your earlier example of a former boss. We use fear to intimidate and bring about what we think is high performance. Now, it's important to stress here that there's a very big difference between motivation, which is a fear-based system, and inspiration, which is a love-based system. So motivation and inspiration, we sort of mix these up and we generically talk about them as if they are one and the same, but they're actually almost exactly the opposite. So motivation is about manipulating the behavior of other people to bring about outcomes that you're looking for, and inspiration is an internal force which lifts us up and comes from a very special place. It comes from your heart or from your soul. So I usually describe it as saying that motivation is lighting a fire under someone, and inspiration is lighting a fire within someone. So this is a second place where we have built all our leadership thinking and theory based on a Pavlovian model that if we ring a bell and the dog salivates, and we haven't really learned much in the last 100 years about that. So we're still doing the same thing. If you meet your sales quota, I'll give you a bonus. That's just a Pavlovian process. And so we use punishment and reward as a way to achieve our corporate goals. That's motivation, and it comes from fear. But if we changed that and replaced it with inspiration, now I'm not saying motivation is bad. We'll need to use motivation in certain circumstances. But inspiration is something we know very little about. We know a lot about motivation because we motivate everywhere in our society. We motivate in advertising. Buy this product or you'll be ugly. We motivate in religion. Join my religion or you'll go to hell. We motivate in business. Do what I say or I'll fire you. We motivate in the family. Do what I say or I'll punish you. We motivate in healthcare. Follow this protocol or you'll die or get sick. So there's no end to this. We've made it a systemic approach to everything in our society. And so we need to leave that model and move towards one where we're inspiring. So that's another of the eight. And separateness we talked about earlier. We separate by function, department, title, hierarchy, salary levels, and so on. And this is alienating to people. You know, successful organizations don't feel that sense of separateness. They feel like one. They feel like a single team. So those are some examples.
Now, let's say that I'm in a position of leadership and I've gotten really accustomed to it. You know what happens when you've been sitting in that position for a long time and you're used to it. You get comfortable with it. How do I become an inspiration for my staff? How do I become an inspiration for my clients? I'm so accustomed to my safe position.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts?
Yes, I think that the last chapter of the book is called Why It's So Difficult to Change. And the reason I wrote that chapter is because I know a lot of people will read this and they'll say, oh yeah, nice, but not going to work in my place. Or, as you just said, this has worked for me for 30 years, I'm not changing. So then I go into some detail about, well, why is that? Why won't we change? Because one of the reasons is we're hardwired to homeostasis, to stay in the same place as we are. That's a survival mechanism that's built into our DNA. So we do that to protect ourselves. And so what happens is somebody comes along with a new idea, and we see that as a threat. But what we really need to think about is, how can I remain open? Now, by the way, this is one of the great secrets of staying young as you age. The more open you are to modern music, to technology, to new ways of thinking, to the way the world is unfolding, the younger you will stay.
I love that.
You'll notice that older people who are stuck in a 50s or 60s or 70s era of music and culture and so on, they age much faster than the folks who are staying current and are genuinely inquisitive and curious. So the answer then is universal, isn't it? It's not just about leadership. It's about staying open, being open-minded. Satya Nadella, who's the CEO of Microsoft, a wonderful client of mine, he has a mantra in which he says he wants every executive to have an open mindset. And that's how he's added $400 billion of value to Microsoft since he took over 3.5 years ago.
Yeah, I love that because that was one of the things that I'd bumped into with that leader that I spoke to you about earlier, that I would have all of these creative, amazing ideas, and it was just get squashed. Do I smell or something?
Yes.
I mean, I know
yes.
these are great ideas to move the story forward.
Yes.
And it wasn't until I broke away and really ended up leading on my own that there were things that I'd really learned. And yes, I'm glad that you said that because you've just offered me a little bit more of a delight why I stay so young and healthy is because I love all the things that you just mentioned. And so I'm going to definitely continue to stay on that track. Are there some essential values that can form the foundation of a more positive and productive organization?
Well, I think there are, but I feel that you could sum it up by saying the question we should ask always about everything is will it inspire? Will my email be inspiring? Will my voicemail message be inspiring? Is the contract that I'm creating for my wireless customer inspiring? Is the flight on my airplane inspiring? Are the things that we do in a restaurant when you have a meal inspiring? It's always about inspiring. The whole point of leadership is to create inspiring relationships with people, with customers, with the environment, with a higher purpose, and within the organization, with shareholders and vendors and all of the others who want to work and collaborate and spend time with people who are inspiring. So the only question really we need to ask is, will this action, will this decision, will this message, will this communication be inspiring?
I might ask an extremely silly question. How will one know if they're being inspirational or are they just stuck on themselves? Like sometimes you find yourself, oh, you're all excited, you're ready to get the going, and you look at the whole team and they're looking at you like you've lost it. And well, one of the things, and this is a really sincere question, is that sometimes for me, this is for me now, I sometimes question my leadership and why am I not able to inspire them to believe in dreaming bigger when all I ever talk about and share is the importance of the time and how you can build so much more in your life. And I still see so many are just like, okay, I'm not really that motivated. We'll wait and see what she tells us or what is she going to say. And I would just step back, Lance, and I was like, is it me or is it just the folks around me? You know, because sometimes your team plays a big role. Like you said, when you started your Fortune 100 company, you knew that that wasn't just you, but the team had that same drive or feeling to have built it.
Yes. Well, I think we need to accept the fact that there are some people who are simply never going to get it. And that's just life. So you don't run your life for them. You run your life for the other 98% who will get it, maybe with help, some faster than others. But we don't, you know, there's a criminal element in our society. That's probably 2% too, and so on. So we don't run the world for those people because otherwise we drive ourselves crazy. We work for the majority. And most people, when they see the opportunity, when they see what's possible, when you model it, they see the light in that sense. The way I think of this is the question becomes, will others, as a result of what I'm doing or saying, feel larger or smaller? If they feel larger, they'll be inspired.
But I feel that there is this opening that I'm not a micromanager. I'm so clear on that. I believe in people and their capacity and their potential. And you and I both know that we all can do our best and strive our best when we're comfortably in a particular position. But even when you're in a position, is it enough just to be happy with the little that you do, or are you willing to even test yourself to see, let me see how much I have in me? It's like I would love to see folks just keep expanding their worth and their story, because personally, I really want to retire.
Yes.
And so the real deal is like, come on, guys, this is your fortune. You know, it's your inheritance. You can make this go. And so, you know, it becomes just a question mark that I have walked with on occasions, like, is it me? Is it me? Or is it that I just haven't created the energy of, I like big thinkers, people who think big. And when I'm thinking big, they're looking at me like, okay, another one of her, you know, ideas. And I just, it hurts because inside of me, I can feel this is God telling me, let's go, let's move this forward. And then when that human energy comes in, I'm like, gosh, this is not what I needed. I needed something that would support the divinity, you know? So I'm just venting.
Right. Well, I think that there's two thoughts here. One is that selection of employees is very important. You know, people with that open mindset, people who are willing and ready to see a bigger picture. But the other side of this is this about you or about them? Are you upset because what you want is not being accomplished? Because we're very judgmental about this. There's nothing wrong with someone who really just wants to get their kids through school and pay their mortgage and spend time with their family. That's what they want to do, and that's what brings them joy. It's not our role to change that or to raise their horizons for them.
I get that, and you're spot on, because a lot of times from what I've learned in my spiritual path, if I'm affected, it is something there. And that's where I was sharing, is it me? You know, because still there is this part inside of the self that says, come on, you know, your energy creates whatever comes into your path. So there's got to be something there that's also teaching you something. I don't want to end our wonderful conversation until you talk about you now currently chair, you're the chair of the Paid Forward Foundation, which I love. And you're also the former chair of the advisory board of the Special Olympics, World Winter Olympics. Share with me a little bit how participating in such meaningful causes have changed you, and why has it become so important to give back?
Well, it depends what we do, doesn't it? I have found that there are many people who get involved with social causes like this because they like to put it on their resume, and not because they're actually committed to doing good work. So, you know, I'm on the hospital board or I'm on the cancer team or whatever. I've been involved with those particular activities because I knew people who were involved. I admired what they did, and I wanted to be part of it. So, for instance, Catherine Ryan Hyde is an author, a brilliant, wonderful author. She wrote the book Pay It Forward, which became a movie. And she started a foundation. She became a friend many years ago. And she needed a chair for her foundation and invited me to be the chair. And so I accepted because I admire what she's doing and I want to further the cause. And it seems like a very clever idea to bring about. I think today, by the way, International Kindness Day, too. So timely that we're talking about this. But kindness, as you know, is something that is missing in so many places, and particularly in corporate life. So I wanted to try and see what we could do with the Pay It Forward movement in the corporate world.
Wonderful. And how is it doing so far?
Well, it's gaining some traction. There's some pretty amazing stories about banks and so on that have actually adopted the Pay It Forward formula. And there are ways in which we teach people, and it's certainly very big in schools. And really, Catherine started her work in the foundation in schools. And again, we need to teach kindness as opposed to bullying in the school system. And by the way,
yes,
as a footnote to this, much of the work that I do in corporate life, I see as remedial work. And when I think about this, I ask, where did you learn that bullying and intimidating and fear work for you? And the answer usually is in the schoolyard. So we need to go backwards and start much earlier. It's not about teaching the corporate executive. It's about teaching young people that there's a better way to do this.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. Lance, it's been a delight having a chit-chat with you. Any tours on the horizon for your new book?
No, the tour world has sort of gone away with the digitization of lighting.
Kindle.
I used to do them a lot. Yes, it doesn't happen so much anymore, unless you're one of the like Bill Clinton or somebody. But the book is doing really, really well. There is a terrific app which I'd love to share with you. Actually, two of them. One is called secretan.com/bellwether. Bellwether is spelled B-E-L-L-W-E-T-H-E-R. It's a free app, and it'll tell you whether or not you're suffering from the bellwether effect. And then there's another app. It's called Spirit at Work. The at is a little round A. Spirit at Work cards. You can get that from the iTunes Store or Google Play. It's a mobile app. And it's another book I wrote with 77 cards written especially for business. So it's a mobile card app, and you just shake the phone and it shuffles the cards, chooses a card to guide you for the day. It's free
those.
Too.
Oh, that's so fantastic. Oh, thank you for doing that. That's really timely. Well, Dr. Lance Secretan, thank you so much. Keep up the good work. And if you're ever in Washington, D.C., I'd love to do a book signing with you. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Lovely. It's been great to be with you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Same here. Many good wishes. Take care.
Bye-bye.
So the whole form of leadership, it's a trial and effort, isn't it? It's really moving more into what is. What's up with you? Where are you coming from? What are your values? What are your core belief systems? And learning a lot. I mean, one of the things that I took from Lance was the openness for music, creativity, you know, really letting things in. And I could totally resonate with that I really believe. It's this openness to new things and to life and to possibilities that for me keeps me really in an optimized driven format than to just stay so settled and safe in something that I'm just like another day. And again, like you said, that it's okay if some of us are in that dimension, but I was speaking in terms of from my story, it's very clear that I am definitely supposed to be going forward, charge ahead, and whoever wants to come can come, who doesn't want to come can stay, but that I need to be also aware of the energy that's required to sustain all of that. Well, I hope you've enjoyed my chit-chat with Dr. Lance Secretan, and you can visit him at secretan.com for more information. He's got a lot of free apps and free exercises on his website, so you can participate in that. So remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission, and we really are here to love each other the same, and so raise your light to such an extent that those around you can't help but actually shine themselves. Here's Kristen Hoffman. Love and gratitude. Take care, everybody, and don't forget to keep up with our Twitter and America Meditating Facebook and Twitter. Take care. Be well.
There's nothing more to do than call on me.
I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes, 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.